Professor Salaita, you're currently teaching at the American University in Beirut.
Yes, sir.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going really well. I'm enjoying my colleagues and students, and it's a fantastic place to be.
Is it expatriates that you're teaching there, or Lebanese natives? Who's your student body?
It's a nice mixture. There's a decent percentage of U.S.-based students, but the majority, I would say, are Lebanese, but they come from throughout the Arab world.
What do they think about your case here with the University of Illinois?
They're pretty fascinated by it because they're generally used to a ceiling on what sorts of speech can get you in trouble, but criticism of Israel is not one of them for them. You know, it's sort of a different set of concerns that might get them in trouble.
Mm-hmm. It's been, I guess, 14 months since then-Chancellor Phyllis Wise withdrew your appointment to the University of Illinois. How do you want this case resolved ultimately?
It would be wonderful to be reinstated to the position for which I was hired. I hope for an outcome that does well by various constituencies at the university that will allow us, I think, collectively to move beyond the troubles and the controversies over the past 14 months.
What are the constituencies that you have in mind?
There are two broad ones. I think folks who support my reinstatement and folks who don't. Right? And I think that to some degree, it's going to take a little bit of work to reconcile those two parties, but it's certainly not insurmountable or impossible.
I was thinking of the divide between those two constituencies. I've certainly seen the support you've garnered at the university in actions like the American Association of University Professors declaring a censure against the U of I because of your case. And I also can tell from comments posted on news articles, letters to the editor, that a lot of people in this region outside of the immediate campus community think your dismissal was justified. There was a letter to the editor in the local paper, the News Gazette, just today. I think the phrase I have written down here called you a hate-filled, unconscionable malcontent with a sick philosophy concerning Jewish people. Do you really want to work at the U of I knowing this is what you'd be coming back to?
Sure. There are effective ways of reaching out to people and being in communication with folks. I think the letter writer who you just read is reacting not to things that I've actually said or things that I actually support, but things that some people have represented me as saying and reporting, and I very much like the opportunity to clear up these misconceptions.
Do you think that you can reach those people who hold those views?
In the end, my thinking is we don't all have to agree with one another. In fact, one of the wonderful things about being on a campus is that different points of view, different philosophies, different moral commitments can and are supposed to coexist with one another. So I'm not necessarily interested in convincing detractors that my way of thinking about Israel, Palestine, or academic freedom, or whatever is the correct and only way, simply to clarify what my points of view have been and what they are, then it's up to them whether they want to accept them or not. But nothing has been said that justifies the abdication of free speech or academic freedom. And I think that's the main issue around which most academics, anyway, have reached something of a consensus.
That makes me think of the reasoning that the university administration used in withdrawing your appointment, and that was over the issue of civility,
right,
and that in situations where the discussion is over topics that people disagree on sharply, that civility was essentially for the protection of the students. In your book, in your new book on civil rights, you question the civility argument. At the same time, it's clear you don't see yourself as uncivil. What's the problem with the civility argument as the university presented it?
Sure. And, you know, and Chancellor Wise, shortly before her resignation, kind of walked back that argument a little bit. The problems with it are numerous. From a legal standpoint, there is no injunction in the First Amendment, nor is there in the practices of academic freedom that dictates that civility must precede the articulation of viewpoint. In fact, the courts have stated over and over and over again that that civility is markedly not a precondition of speech. So then it becomes a question of etiquette or a moral question in lots of ways. But my argument in Uncivil Rights is primarily that incivility is not a neutral term, and it's a term that can be arbitrarily applied to viewpoints that people in power find distasteful or that they find threatening in some way. And it can be used then to mark those ideas and their speakers as somehow unable to access the respectable spaces of campus. And in that sense, it's a troublesome proposition because it's sprawling and it's subjective. And you can put 10 people in a room and ask them to define civility or incivility, and you're going to end up with 10 different answers.
And are you saying that the civility argument, in essence, plays favorites, essentially saying that some points of view are in and others are out?
It certainly does, yes.
Along with the charge of incivility has been the charge of anti-Semitism. It was in that letter to the editor I read you a quote from. You've denied that. At the same time, you're clear in your position in Uncivil Rights that you are anti-Zionist, if that's correct. What's the difference? How do you make that difference clear to people who don't see it?
Yeah, it's difficult. It takes a lot of time and a lot of conversation to work out some of these complex and difficult issues. The shortest version I can give you, and I hope it's one that the listeners will find useful or at least comprehensible, is that I Zionism is a distinctive political ideology that necessarily favors one community over other communities primarily on the basis of religion or even biology. I do not see it as coterminous with Jewishness or Judaism, because ever since we've had Zionism, we have had people who self-identify as Jewish speaking in some way in opposition to it, and that's very much the case today. In fact, my primary argument is that it's dangerous in many ways to conflate Judaism or Jewishness and Zionism, because the practices of Zionism are inherently violent, and we do not want to confer that violence to the cultural context of Jewish practice or Jewish identity.
It sounds difficult, though, knowing the arguments I see, the attacks made on you, to make that difference clear to people who disagree with you sharply, and then let them know that you believe, if I am correct, that your criticism of the Israeli government is not the same as wishing ill will towards the Israeli people.
That's absolutely correct.
How do you do that, though?
Well, we criticize the behaviors of governments the world over, including our own here in the United States, without wishing, you know, ill will on the inhabitants of those nation states. It's something that political consumers of all stripes do. I have no desire for whatever outcome exists, for any sort of displacement of Israelis, any sort of violence practiced against Israelis. My ideal outcome would be a secular democratic state in which all communities have equal rights and, in fact, come eventually to share not only a nation but a national identity. I've never advocated in any of my various political viewpoints, a certain sort of violence. It's anathema to my political sensibilities and to my sense of morality. Part of the problem is this conflation comes about because people find it difficult to separate Israel as a nation state from people who are identified by or identify as Jewish.
That it is seen as a Jewish state.
Mm-hmm.
Your vision of a future Palestine is not a Jewish state. It's a state which has Jews in it, but not strictly a Jewish state.
Not an Islamic state, not a Christian state, not a Jewish state. A democratic state based on democratic principles rather than on sectarianism, yes.
This did start with the reaction to tweets that you made mm-hmm. last summer. In your book, you write about how those tweets, you say, are taken out of context.
Sure.
That there are a lot of other tweets that you sent out, which were obviously peaceful in aim. What did you say in those other tweets?
I note that I make no moral distinction between the value of a Jewish life or an Arab life or any life for that matter. I see them all as equally valuable. I make it clear that I'm not into a sort of tribal politics in which I automatically agree with Arabs and disagree with Jews, that in fact I'm in political and moral solidarity with many Jews and in serious disagreement with many Arabs. So it's I very often articulate a very basic version of secular humanism that's very old-fashioned, that dislikes the idea of human hierarchies, that dislikes the idea of disparate rights and privileges, and that sees us all, as I say in one tweet, as equals in the eyes of God.
Looking back at those tweets, I guess after all that's happened, do you regret any of the individual tweets that you sent out?
The political positions that are inscribed or articulated in those tweets are ones that I would not walk back. I do wish that there were better opportunities earlier on for me and some folks at the University of Illinois who were concerned to have had conversations about the meanings of those tweets and my use of social media, particularly as a private citizen. But in terms of the sentiments, the political sentiments that underlie those tweets, they're still viewpoints that I hold to and that I find defensible.
Imagine that you're back, that you are teaching at the U of I. What sort of impact, starting in the American Indian Studies program, what sort of impact would you want to make as a faculty member?
I would be really interested primarily in playing whatever role I can in helping to stabilize and rebuild the program, which has seen pretty significant losses. They're down to 2 faculty members now. And I would also be very interested in being in conversation on campus and beyond about what it is people do in the field. You know, I've heard a lot of reaction to my tweets and the ensuing controversies. And one thing that I've noted is that a lot of folks have some pretty common misconceptions about American Indian studies, about indigenous peoples, indigenous communities. And I think one of the things that we can do in that field, and a lot of people are doing it already, of course, is to share our knowledge of what occurs in the field with audiences who might not have had access to it.
Well, Professor Salina, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you very much for having me.